Held in much admiration by so many people, and you know, I love seeing from afar what you and Lisa are doing in this community. I thought I was giving a breakfast cheer this morning, but notification popped up on my phone. It said breakfast cheer Belmont all day. That's so I don't know exactly how long you're expecting me to speak for, but I know that if I speak for long enough, I'll get a barbecue at the end. That's one of the good reasons to come here today. It's the 3 weeks. We're beginning to think about Tisha B'Av. We had last Sunday was Shiva Saba Tammuz. 2 weeks' time is Tisha B'Av. There weren't many opportunities for breakfast shiurim on Sundays at this time of year. But Tisha B'Av is one day in the year. 3 weeks is just, you know, a short period. But what I want to share with you is the notion that remembering Yerushalayim, or what we call Zeichel Churban, is something which actually should stay with us during the course of the whole year. And I want to demonstrate how this actually serves as a model that's not just for remembering Yerushalayim, but I would suggest for dealing with trauma in our own lives in a very healthy way. So I want us to look at a passage in the Gemara at the end of the third parak of Masechet Bava Batra, and then to look at some of the associated halakhot, some of which you'll be familiar with, some of which you might not be familiar with. I've learned over the years that giving out a page full of Hebrew can sometimes be a little bit daunting. So there's some English there, there's some pictures there. So, you know, people hopefully won't get bored. And if you do, nowadays everybody has their mobile phone anyhow. So you can... You can follow along that way. So let's start with the Gemara. The Gemara says Tanu Rabbanan. Tanu Rabbanan introduces a Tanaitic statement that's a brighter. Kishecharav habayit bashnia. So the second time the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. We must remember this must have been a very immensely traumatic episode for the Jewish people. You know, they'd already had the Beit HaMikdash destroyed once. Now the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed a second time. They were under the dominion of Rome. Tens of thousands of people were exiled from Eretz Israel. And, you know, what had happened to the Jewish people? So it was great trauma for Am Yisrael. Rabu Perushin be Yisrael. There were many people in the Jewish people who just wanted to stop engaging, really, with life in a full way. They wanted shelo lechol basar. They thought, you know, we should never eat meat again. Meat is out. Shelo lishtot yayin. And they would never drink wine again. They would be like avelim for the 9 days would go on for forever. Nitpa halen Rabbi Yoshua. So Rabbi Yoshua engaged with them, Amar Lahen, and he said to them, Banai, my sons, my children, why don't you eat meat, and why won't you drink wine? Why are you taking this all so seriously? Amru lo, so they said to him, Nochal basar, how can we eat meat? Shemimenu makrivin al gabei mizbeach, because they used to offer up meat on the altar, va'achshav batel, and now there's no altar any longer, we don't offer up sacrifices. Every time we eat a lamb chop or whatever it is, it reminds us of the Beit HaMikdash and what no longer exists. Nishte yayin, and how can we drink wine? Shemnaskin al gabei hamizbeach, wine used to be poured on the altar, vachshav batel, and now there's no altar any longer. Every time we pick up a glass of Chardonnay, it reminds us of the sacrifices and the libations in the Beit HaMikdash, and, you know, we can't bear that. Amar lahem, so he said to them, you know what, im kein, if that's so, lechem lo nochal, I don't think you should eat bread either. That's because the meal offerings that was offered up in the Beit HaMikdash no longer exist. And every time you eat a bread roll, that should remind you of the Lechem HaPanim, or the meal offerings. So they said, you know, maybe you're right, but Efshar B'Feirot, we can eat fruit. Peirot lo nochal, but he said to them, no, you shouldn't eat fruit either. Shekvar batlu bikurim, because they used to be the first fruit offerings, the bikurim which were brought to the Beit HaMikdash. Every time you take a bunch of grapes, it will remind you of the bikurim that used to be offered up. Eshav afeirot achirim. So they said, you know what, we can eat other fruits. We'll eat oranges and grapefruits and mangoes. They were never brought to the Beit HaMikdash. He said, okay, but maim lo nishter. We shouldn't drink water either. Shekva batel nisuch hamayim, because on Sukkot they used to have the water pouring ceremony in the Beit HaMikdash, and now that no longer exists. Every time you have a cup of Evian, it will remind you of the destroyed Beit HaMikdash. Shatku. So they were silent. They were flummoxed. Amar lahen, so he said to them, Banai, my children, bov omer lachem. Listen, I'm going to tell you something. Shelo lehitabel kol ikar, not to mourn at all for Yerushalayim is impossible. Yesha, we can't put Yerushalayim out of our minds. Shekvar nigzera gzera, because it's happened. Yerushalayim has been destroyed. Ulehitabel yoter midai, and to mourn more than enough. Efshar. Now that's also impossible. She'ein gozrin gezeira al hatzibur, because you never make a decree, an enactment for the community. Ela imkein rov tzibur yucholin la'amod ba, unless most of the community is able to withstand that. So this is an interesting, this would be an interesting shir in its own right, the notion of never making communal enactments unless most people are going to be able to abide by them. You know, sort of, you think about it, sort of, no talking in shul, or no mobile phones during weekday services, or things like that. You know, you always have to try and work out, you know, is that something that most people are going to be able to deal with, or is it something that most people are not going to be able to deal with? But to make an enactment that nobody should ever drink wine, nobody should ever eat meat, is something which is just going to be impractical. You don't want to create a situation where the community as a whole is unable to abide by the rules. And we've got a pasuk, a verse from Malachi, that which supports this notion. Hagoy kulo. So the pasuk refers to hagoy kulo, that you're only cursed if you don't abide by something which is applicable to hagoy kulo, to the entire community. But if it's not applicable to the entire community, then it's not a terrible thing to transgress it. So therefore, we don't make gezeirot, we don't make communal enactments, unless it's something which is manageable. And our chacham ru chachamim. But this is actually what the chachamim decided is appropriate to do. Sadat amek b'tor besid. So when a person decorates their house, you can decorate it with sid, with lime, with lime, paint it as they did in the old days. Umashayeb or davar muat. But you leave a little bit of the house unpainted. The kama, how much of it do you leave unpainted? Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said, Amar al amar, a square cubit. So saying that, you know, you decorate your house, build a beautiful new house, decorate it. You should leave a little bit undecorated to remind you that Yerushalayim is lying desolate. How can you live in a palatial home when Yerushalayim is lying desolate? Amar Rav Chista, and Rav Chista said, that's a good idea, and it should also be keneged hapetach. It should be in front of the doorway. We'll talk about where that is in due course, but in a place where you can easily see it, so you're reminded of it all the time. Not sort of like in the Pesach cupboard that you only open once a year. Oseh adam kol tzorchei su'uda. And likewise, a person can provide an entire meal. U'meshayeh davar muat. And you leave a little bit, something missing from the meal. Maihi, what type of thing can you leave missing? Amar Rav Papa said, kasa daharsana. This seems to be some sort of fish paste that they used to put on the table. That's, and you know, if it was a really splendid meal, you'd even have the fish paste there. But you know what? You leave that off because, you know, again, Yerushalayim has been exiled, and you know, how can we eat like we're at a royal banquet? So you leave something missing. Osai shakos takshiteha. Likewise, a woman is allowed to wear all her jewellery. Mishayeret davar muad, but she should leave something that she's, one piece of jewellery, one item of jewellery that she's not wearing. Maihi, what would it be that she won't wear? Amar Rav said, bat sadaa. It means just sort of that she's done herself up and she just leaves a little bit of her hair at the temples which she hasn't beautified. Shenemar, why do we have all these restrictions? Because we've got a pasuk that we're all familiar with. Im eshkachech Yerushalayim, tishkach yamini. If I forget you, O Yerushalayim, then my right hand should forget its cunning. Tidbak l'shoni l'chiki, and my tongue should cleave to its to the roof of my mouth. My al rosh simchati, and the pasuk concludes, im lo alet Yerushalayim al rosh simchati, if I don't elevate Yerushalayim above all my celebrations. Amar Rav Yitzchak, so Rav Yitzchak said, ze efem makle shebrosh chatanim. This is referring to the ashes which are put on a chatan's head. Okay, and we'll talk about that again in due course. But there's a minhag mentioned in the Talmud that when the chatan is standing under the chuppah, that ashes are placed on his head to remind him of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Interesting that the minhag of chuppahs that we're mentioning here is the Efem Makle, which we're not so familiar with, and the minhag that we're very familiar with, which is, of course, breaking the glass, that isn't mentioned here, but we'll come on to that. Amale Rav Papa la Abaye. Rav Papa said to Abaye, Heicha manachla. Where should these ashes be placed? B'makom tefillin. Should be placed on the point of the head where you usually put your tefillin. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Lasum la'avelei tzion, lateit lahem pe'er, tachat efer. This is a pasuk in Yeshaya, referring to giving to the mourners of Zion, of Yerushalayim, latet lahem pe'er, in the future they will be given an ornament, which is usually a reference to tefillin, or Teir Yisrael b'tifarah, tachat efer, in the place of the ashes which were on their heads. As an aside, certainly when I was in yeshiva, Rav Lichtenstein, Zichrono Livracha, was very makpid at a wedding that he would always put ashes on the head of the chatan. And usually while he was filling out the ketubah, so he would make sure that he's got the ashes. So I remember one wedding that we were watching him fill out the ketubah. It was in the Yerushalayim hotel. And he called over one of the waiters and said, could you get me an ashtray? So the waiter brings him an ashtray. He brings him an empty ashtray. He goes, No, a full ashtray. And the waiter looked at him and was like, what's going on? Why does the person want a dirty ashtray? Because he wanted to take some of the ashes. And then the Gemara concludes, V'chol ha-mitabel al Yerushalayim, anybody who joins in with the mourning for Yerushalayim, zochev ro'eh b'simchata. This isn't something which is pointless, but in actual fact, if you mourn properly for Yerushalayim, it brings a blessing for you as well, that in the future you will be privileged to participate in the rejoicing of Yerushalayim. She'ne'emar, again, as the pasuk in the Navi says, and we'll lay this as one of the haftarot after Tisha B'Av, Simchu et Yerushalayim v'giluvah, rejoice with Yerushalayim, and celebrate kol ha-mitablim aleha, all those who mourn with it. So what we see here is a model that's of recognizing the tragedy of the Churban HaBayit, of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, engaging with it continuously, but not excessively, and making certain reminders in our lives that we should be always aware that there's something missing from our national character in the terms of the destruction of Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. So we had a number of halachot appearing here. We had the house, that when you decorate your house, you leave an undecorated area. We had the din about a suuda, that when you have a fancy meal, you should don't put out the fish paste. That's next time you go to Mendy's or something, there'll be all this fish paste just staying there. Nobody's going to buy the fish paste any longer. The halakha about a woman and her jewellery, not wearing all the jewellery at one time. And then the halakha also about the chatan placing ashes on his head. So I thought if we turn over, let's see some of the halakhic applications of this. And let's start off by looking at the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch says as follows. Mishecharav Beit HaMikdash. When the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Tiknu Chachamim Shehayu Bo'oto Hador, the sages at the time instituted, She'ein Bonim Le'olam Binyan Mesuyad Muchuyar Kevinyan Hamlachim. You should never build something which is palatial, something which is suitable for royal residency. El Atach Beito Betit, but you should, you'll put tar or whatever it is, a cement on your walls. The sad basid, and you'll cover it with limestone. Umashayer makom ama alama keneged hapetach blosid. And then you leave an undecorated area in front of the doorway. Now, what do we mean in front of the doorway? It seems that we mean that You've got a wall opposite where you walk in, and modern houses perhaps, you know, aren't always like this. But as you walk in through the front door, the wall opposite the front door, you'll see, as soon as you walk in, you'll see this undecorated area reminding you of the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And if you buy a property that's already decorated, so then you can assume that it was built and decorated by a previous non-Jewish occupant, and you don't have to remove the decorations that are there. Now, our experience is that, of course, that's most of the homes that we go into, that certainly in Chutz La'aretz, people don't leave this amal ama. People don't leave this area which is undecorated in front of the doorway. In actual fact, in Eretz Israel, many people do. You can see in Fig A, or the picture I've got just underneath, you can see this is a house in Israel, and you can see just on the left side there's an area of the wall. The picture's not so good, so it looks like it might be a piece of modern art, but in actual fact that's the it's the undecorated area, and that's not properly plastered over. But the reality is that many of us don't do this. And the question is, why is this a halakha? It appears in Shulchan Aruch. It's not just sort of, need to be careful what I say, but sort of, you know, some Kabbalistic or Hasidic minhag that, you know, grew up in Poland in the 19th century. That's, you know, it's a halakha in the Shulchan Aruch that says you should be doing this. How is it that we don't do it? So look in the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah tells us, this is the Chafetz Chaim, his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, he says, Yesh makilin al yadei chol. So there are some people who are lenient, that if the plaster work isn't of a fine quality limestone, but it's mixed with a cheaper sand to make it more affordable, disfirulu dehechad irev chol shuvlu mikre b'shem sid. It's no longer called proper sin, it's no longer called proper lime, and it's not as beautiful as it usually is. The Mishnah Berurah, this is, you know, the Chafetz Chaim, that's, you know, writing in Poland in the late 19th century, you know, in an area and an era when we think everybody there was from, and he says, nobody seems to do it. That's lo nagu l'shayeh, people don't do this. Why not? Because maybe they follow this lenient view that if it's you're not using proper lime, so then you can be lenient. But it's still strange. Because in actual fact, people just, you know, they do put this lime on their walls. Maybe we're talking about a certain type of lime, which is presumably some very good quality lime called gupsh. Shehu lavan bioter. It's very, very white and bright. That would be prohibited. Masha enkin sid shelanu, but not normal lime. Ach kol zeh dochak. But I'm not really convinced by that. But tzarech iyun aman noagin heter. And really need to try and give consideration is how is it that we're lenient. And so we could say nowadays, you know, none of us put lime on our walls, but we have beautiful wallpaper and such things. So it's an interesting question why this practice has fallen out of use. But it's certainly, if you go to Yerushalayim, people's homes in Yerushalayim, other places in Eretz Israel as well, that you will see that there are people who are strict about this this halakha, and it, you know, really serves in a you know, very constant way as a reminder that there is something missing from our, you know, from our lives. And perhaps paradoxically, this is something that we should have more in Chutz La'aretz than in Eretz Yisrael. You know, Chutz La'aretz, you can establish as we all do, you know, wonderful lives here, that's oblivious to the fact that we perhaps ought to be somewhere else, and you know, perhaps there's more room for us to be worried about this when we're far from the site of the Beit HaMikdash than when we're close to it. Let's move on and look at the other halachot. So continuing in the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, V'heitchein hitkinu sha'orech shulchan la'asot suda la'orchim. So they also established that a person who lays a table for a banquet, mechaser mimenu ma'at, so you leave something missing. Umeniach makom panui b'lo ka'ara min ha'ka'arot haru'yot la'teit sham, and you leave sort of one of the courses or one of the side dishes that you would normally expect to have, so you don't put on the table. So again, this is something that we're unfamiliar with. That's, I mean, I came here this morning, I was expecting fried eggs and omelettes and things. So maybe that's, maybe you were going to have that and you decided, Zeche l'churban, that you won't do that. But essentially, again, it's something that we should have. That's why is it that we don't follow that halacha? If you look in the Aruch HaShulchan at the bottom of the page, he refers to this, and he says, so they made a directive that something should be missing from the meal. You don't serve something, just a reminder though, that we're in communal national avilut. This is the Aruch HaShulchan, a contemporary of the Chafetz Chaim, saying that, you know, who's ever heard of this? That's, you know, if something's missing from the table, it's because we ran out of it. That's, you know, it's not because we deliberately didn't put it on the table. The kasher hatzior lefanenu, ma'ama kom hapanui. So, you know, it's not really clear, like, you know, what should be here, that's what's so statutory for a meal that if it wasn't on the table, person would, you know, would notice it. You know, if you didn't have the jam on the table for the croissants, you know, would anybody, worse bit of something, another cost-cutting measure, for the shul, or something like that. Nobody would say, well, yes, obviously there ought to be jam. That's, or, you know, it's a Shabbat meal, or it's a wedding meal, you know, there, obviously there ought to be, you know, they don't serve the after eights and petty fours at the end, so, you know, nobody, fine, they haven't served after eights and petty fours, and that's a bit 1970s, whatever. That's, nobody would particularly notice that that's missing. So the Aruch HaShulchan says it's just the formalities of our formal banquets are not the same as they were once upon a time, and that's why we don't do it. But it's, I think it's very interesting from a perspective the development of halakha that we're seeing here, two halachot which appear in the Talmud and also in the Shulchan Aruch, which are simply not really observed any longer. That's, you know, and as I say, these are not obscure halachot. That's, you know, they find expression in, you know, the most mainstream of sources, and nevertheless, we're not terribly familiar with them. Let's carry on in the Shulchan Aruch. So the second line, so when a woman takes get, puts on all her jewellery, Meshaira Mimi Mineha Tachshitshin or Heget Bahem, she should leave a piece of jewellery that she's not wearing, Kideshe Loye Tachlit Shalem, so she shouldn't be fully adorned. Uksha Takatan no Seisha. And then when a chatan gets married, lokeach efem makle, he takes some ashes, v'notim b'roshob b'makom hanachat tefillin, and places them on his head where the tefillin are placed. As I say, there are different minhagim. Some people do, some people don't. That's then the Rama adds. So this is Rav Moshe Isserles that's adding, v'yesh mekomot shenagu l'shaber kos b'shat kupa. There are places where the minhag is to break a glass at the wedding. So again, it's kind of interesting, you know, that if we went to a wedding and they didn't break the glass, you know, we'd be very, you know, concerned that, you know, what else have they missed out? You know, this is a key part. Very often when I go to a wedding and there are non-Jewish guests there and sort of they might sort of come up to me before the chuppah and say, oh, you know, you're the right, can you tell us, you know, that they want to know, two key minhagim at Jewish weddings. One is, will they be breaking a glass? And if it's not before, then they might ask me at the dinner, why do... And the other is, what's the significance? Why do you have to carry the bride and groom on chairs for the dance? So I'm able to answer the first one, and I'm able to answer the second one as well. I think it's something to do with Fiddler on the Roof. That's... But in any event, that's something that, you know, we know is an absolute non-negotiable, as it were, at a Jewish wedding. That's the Rama brings down as Yesh Mekomot. It's like kind of a minhag that some places do it. Or, and then he mentions a second minhag, which I've certainly never seen. Or to put a black cloth or some other sign of mourning on the head of the chatan. Never seen at a wedding a chatan wearing a black... I mean, I've seen chatanim wearing black kippot and things like that, or black hat, but never seen a black...
Black
Black raincoat, yeah. That's, I've never seen a chatan wearing a black cloth on his head as a sign of avilut. But in any event, we're seeing this is the minhag that we are familiar with, Zeichel l'churban, is brought down here by the Rama. And then the Shulchan Aruch concludes, V'chol einu ha'advarim k'delis korech Yerushalayim. All these things are so that we should remember Yerushalayim. Sheneemar, as the Pasuk says, im eshkachech Yerushalayim, im lo alech Yerushalayim arosh simchati. That's so if I forget you, Yerushalayim, if I don't raise Yerushalayim above all my celebrations. Now, we're very familiar, as I say, with the custom of breaking the glass. So we know that the chatan stamps on it, that, and, you know, all sorts of myths about why we do it. And, you know, so many times I've heard, you know, rabbis say, you know, or best men say, you know, that's the reason why you do it. It's the last time you're going to be putting your foot down and things like that. Jokes which were once upon a time funny, but by the time you've heard them about 45 times, they tend to lose their humour. But in actual fact, we'll discover that it wasn't always the minhag to stamp on the glass. And if you look carefully in what we just read in the Shulchan Aruch, it just says, Shenagu l'shaber kos. We break a glass. Now, I've got here two interesting pictures. The first is by an artist called Bernard Picard, that who was a French artist in the 18th century, and he compiled an encyclopedia of some sort of the religious practices of various tribes around the world. And it's very, very interesting because it's what was a contemporary evidence of what was going on, not just in Jewish communities, but, you know, Catholic communities and pagan communities, you know, all around the world. And you can quite often find engravings of Bernard Picard. And here he's got the, I don't know, I'm presumably not pronouncing it properly, Cérémonie Nuptiale de Jus Portugais, which means the wedding ceremony of the Portuguese Jews. That's, which is about as far as my French extends. That's useful French phrases. That's, I can say this is a Portuguese Jewish wedding ceremony. Will get me a long way in Calais. Now, this is actually the breaking the glass. If you look at it closely, there is in the middle of the picture towards the bottom a silver platter. There's a silver platter there, and you can see the chatan holding a glass in his hand. And he's about to hurl the glass into that plate. So they didn't stamp on the glass in those days. The minhag was to take the glass and to throw it onto the plate. That's
health and safety.
Health and safety. That's, well, maybe it was because they worried about people injuring their feet. That's so maybe that was better. I mean, this is a very fascinating picture on a number of grounds. First of all, that you can see the kala and her mother and mother-in-law are sitting down under the chuppah, which we don't usually do. And the chuppah is doesn't seem to be what we would, you know, usually recognise as a wedding chuppah. It seems to be like the type of canopy that goes over a throne. That's so a number of interests, you know, the chatan seems to be standing up and the kala seems to have a chair. Don't know exactly what that means. But in any event, we see that the custom of stamping on the glass, which we're familiar with, clearly wasn't universal. I mean, we know from the Rama that in any event, it wasn't a universal custom to break the glass. And the way that we break it is clearly not the way it was always done. So that was in that would have been in Spain. That's in the 18th century. If you look at the picture below, this is a picture from the Jewish Encyclopedia of the synagogue in Fürth in Germany. And you can see I've circled on the wall that I looked carefully actually to see if you've done this in the refurbishments here in Belmont. The wall outside the shul, that's I've circled a Magen David. Now you can see in the bottom right hand corner there's a chuppah going on. That's the minhag in Germany in the Middle Ages was to have the chuppah in the Chatzer Beit HaKnesset. They didn't have the the chuppah in the synagogue itself, but they had it in the shul courtyard.
Which I think looks today.
Many places still do. So you can see the chuppah taking place. Now, that circled mugging David is what they call a chuppahstein. Now, my Yiddish is very poor, but chuppahstein means a chuppah stone. That's what the minhag there was, again, to throw the glass, but to throw the glass against the wall of the shul. Which is perhaps why you've got grills on the windows. In any event, that was seemed to be the minhag there in the Middle Ages in Germany. If you Google chuppahstein, spell it correctly, you'll find a couple of pictures of these chuppah stones on the walls of Batei Knesset. So again, it's interesting how that minhag has developed. Now, one of the peculiar things about breaking the glass is, you know, what we established is the purpose of breaking the glass. The purpose of breaking the glass is Zeche l'Churban, to remind us of the destruction of Yerushalayim. This is an act of Avilut. Even though this is a simcha, you know, we're celebrating a wedding, we want to put a slight dampener on it at the end. We want to curtail the celebrations. What always happens at the end of the wedding? Chatan breaks the glass, and immediately everybody, thank you, and immediately everybody shouts out Mazel Tov, the band starts, and you know, this is a grand celebratory finale to the to what's going on under the chuppah. You know, it seems incompatible. This is supposed to be Avelut, and instead it's celebration. So I have here, we won't necessarily look at this inside, but I have here a responsa from Rav Uziel. Rav Uziel was the Sfardi chief rabbi of Israel at the time of Hakamat HaMedina. Rav Uziel addresses this question, and he says, you know, it's supposed to be an act of mourning, and instead it's become an act of celebration. And he says that if possible, I would abolish the custom. It's so out of place, I would stop doing this altogether, because it's supposed to be Avelut, not Simcha. But nobody's going to listen to me. I find it hard to understand how a rabbi could say that, you know, I wish I could do this, but nobody's going to listen to me. But apparently that was the way it once upon a time was. He says, you know, certainly it would be good to follow the practice of those communities where after the breaking of the glass, then everybody should say together the pasuk of Imesh Kachech, and then go on to the simcha. So I try under the chuppah to tell a chatan to break it just before the end, so of the Imesh Kachech, so that it's still part of Imesh Kachech rather than part of the Mazel Tov. But certainly it is important that we should, I think, log in or link in with the real meaning. I want to conclude by looking just at a couple of pictures on the back page. If you go to the Israel Museum or look in the Encyclopedia Judaica, you'll find these wedding rings or marriage rings from various countries in Europe, 17th, 18th century. Now, if any of us were at a wedding and we saw that the chatan was putting a ring like this on the finger of the kala, we'd have a word, if not with the rabbi under the chuppah, at least with the rabbi of our shul, and say, was that all right what they did? Isn't it supposed to be a plain gold band? So how come these rings were used in the Middle Ages when it seems to go against everything that we've been taught? So if you look in various of the articles about these things in the encyclopedias, etc., they'll tell you that the house represents, of course, the Jewish home, and this is why it was used under the chuppah, because the chatan was telling his kala that together they were going to build a Jewish home. But I read a while back an article by Rabbi Professor Daniel Sperber, who made the very cogent suggestion that in actual fact these rings were never used for the act of kiddushin. They were never used for the chatan to give the kala as the act of marriage, but rather these were chuppah rings which were put on at the end of the ceremony on the right hand. And the building, which developed over the course of time into looking like a house, had actually begun as representing the Beit HaMikdash. And it's reflecting the pasuk that Imesh kachech Yerushalayim, if I forget you, O Yerushalayim, tishkach yamini, my right hand should forget its cunning. So at the end of the wedding ceremony, what they would do, I don't know if this was on the chatan's hand or the kala's hand, but they would place this ring on the right hand with an image of the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim to remind the bridal couple that in actual fact what they were doing, even though this was Rosh Simchati, this was the time of their great celebration, nevertheless, they had to remember Yerushalayim. And that solves our halachic conundrum, because this was never used as a ring for the act of marriage. Rather, it was used as a ring to remind us of the concept of Imesh Kachech Yerushalayim. So, looking at all of this together, I think we can learn two things. Number one, we can learn that, you know, we talk about, you know, the 3 weeks, and we try and link in with Yerushalayim and the exile of the Jewish people at this time of year. But in actual fact, it's not limited just one day a year or limited just three weeks of the year. It's something which should be somewhat conscious in our minds the entire time. And I think particularly in this day and age of positive experiences in Galut, that, you know, we're not being pursued by Cossacks, that there are worrying, that's rumbles on the political landscape, but essentially, you know, we have religious freedom and live nice lives here. It's very easy for us to forget where we really ought to be aspiring to be, and there should be a constant reminder in our lives that something is lacking in that regard. And I think also it's a very constructive model for how we deal with trauma in our own lives. This is reflecting the trauma of the Jewish people, but also in our own lives we all experience bereavement and loss and trauma of various types. I think this is setting us a model that it shouldn't be something which defines our lives and has an overbearing impact on the continuity of our lives. It's something which, you know, a healthy way of dealing with it, always to have it in the background, always to have an awareness of it, to engage with it fully on certain occasions throughout the year, but to be able to move on and to conduct life in a normal and positive way. But I think the way that I obviously want to finish the shiur is by just re-quoting the last lines of the Gemara, which is Cholam Itabel Al Yerushalayim Zochev Ro Ebesimchata, that anybody who participates and shares in the Avelut for Yerushalayim should merit to join with the celebration in the future. Sheneimah Simchu Et Yerushalayim V'Girubba. That's that we should, Be'ezrat Hashem, in due course, be able to celebrate and rejoice in Yerushalayim. Ir HaKodesh B'mheira V'Yameinu. Amen.
Thank you so much for sharing that really